Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we are here today on Wednesday, the, what is it?
15th.
15th. All right, so the 15th of June, the summer is flying by. It's for anybody who's paying quarterly taxes, by the way, due today. Today, don't forget, quarterly taxes are due today. I got mine out yesterday. Very happy with that. Biz Rocket Radio is a show where we get a chance to talk with and learn from executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area, learn from some of their experiences, the challenges that they've had, some of the successes that they've had. And today's show has got a theme. Our theme today is a kind of a popular one, and that is executives in transition. Everybody who's here today has some experience in that area, and we look to learn from that experience in getting a better understanding of what they do and how they operate. Our first guest is Jennifer Kahnweiler, right?
Weiler.
See, I knew I was going to get
that
wrong.
Okay.
Kahnweiler. She even told me it was just like, sounds like Rottweiler.
Rottweiler,
right?
Yeah, but that's kind of a negative connotation, but we're going to go with...
Rottweilers are beautiful dogs.
Okay, I believe you, John.
They're fantastic. Yeah. So, Jennifer, maybe you could give us a little bit of a background on your company, about you, and
sure.
You know what you do.
Sure. Thank you, John. I really appreciate that and being here with you today, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. What I do is I'm a speaker, and I'm an executive coach, and I'm an author. And what I specialize in is helping bring out the best in introverted leaders. And that's really, those are the hidden gems in organizations. So I work with companies doing consulting in that area. And I've been in this field of HR and leadership development for many years now, coming along 30. So I have a few ideas that I'd love to share today.
And you get your PhD, and you're all educated and all that good stuff. So we are not used to that. Not many people I hear that, you know, they got some master's degrees maybe, but
yeah.
PhD.
Well, I like to call myself the down-to-earth PhD.
Oh, all right, good. So you're not all snooty?
I'm all, I could be snooty if you want me
no,
to. That's
I'd
fine.
Not.
I can play that role.
No, we're only snooty.
No, I basically, I'm about application and practice, and that's what my clients tell about me as well, that I really believe in using the tools that are out there to be effective in the workplace.
So a little bit of an aside from some of the questions that I had thought of, but you mentioned the introverted leader.
Yes.
Have you read the book Good to Great?
Yes, I have.
And it sounds like the kind of level five leader, it seemed like on a regular basis that way, kind of that introverted, not really out there and taking all the spotlight. Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I did write a book called The Introverted Leader, Building on Your Quiet Strength. And absolutely, there's correlation with the work that you just described. And the exciting news, John, about all of this is folks who are quieter, who get their energy from within, we're really seeing, even research is supporting this now, that many times they make even more effective leaders at the top of organizations and throughout companies in terms of getting the job done. And there are many reasons for that, but I'm really very excited about this work.
What are you finding the part of what you're doing now that you enjoy the most?
You know, I get up every day, and I know it sounds kind of like hokey, but I look forward to work. I love it all. I love the balance that I have between the various sectors of my business. I know you're very interested in growing businesses, and for me, it's really important to have that synergy. For instance, I do executive coaching, and I also do speaking, and I do writing, as I mentioned, and all of those strains feed each other. Mm-hmm. So when I'm out talking and giving a keynote and people are sharing challenging, provocative questions, I can then go write about it and use their wisdom. And when I'm working with clients, all of that information that I'm gathering out there is helping me in being more effective with my individual coaching clients. Mm-hmm. So I think I would answer in a short version. It's the synergy and just the excitement of all of that working together to help people and bring out their best.
So describe for us who your ideal client would be.
My ideal client are really organizations who are interested in investing in their talent. And what I mean by that is in developing their leaders at all levels of the organization. And in particular, to just kind of take that down a notch to make that more visible, it's really organizations who realize that soft skills lead to hard results. And I'm finding that more and more companies are recognizing that folks who I work quite a bit with in the technical areas and in financial areas that you're familiar with can be very effective in their jobs, but they really, to be absolutely effective, they need those interpersonal and people skills.
So when you say soft skills, that's what you're referring
to? Yeah, and I hesitate to use the word because there used to be such a bias against folks like me who would come in and tell you how to have a conversation with your boss, you know?
Your inner feelings and all that.
Yeah, and now
stuff.
They're actually calling us up, folks like us, and saying, come in and teach us that, because our folks are failing with customers. They're having challenges with their teammates. They're exploding on their team. So let's kind of teach them how to be more effective and get their message across and influence others. So that's kind of the area that I'm working in now.
You have any examples? I mean, you don't have to throw out any particular names or anything, but give me some examples of when you've gone into an organization and been able to help with something like that.
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. I think in terms of, let me think of one case that I had recently. I did a program for a large organization here in town, and it's made up of a lot of researchers and scientists. And in working with some of those individuals afterwards, I was finding that they were having a really tough time having conversations with their direct reports and vice versa. The direct reports weren't feeling comfortable and coming into them. And part of it wasn't because they were mean or they didn't intend to open communication up, but they just weren't putting a priority on that. And so we worked out a system for that company or that organization to really establish more of an open door policy and help their managers to do that in a very tangible way. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just opening the door. There were other things they had to do to put in line. But that's made some real results in that organization. And I'm coming back and working with them more individually with some of their executives to really hone in on what are the skills they need to have that open dialogue with their folks, because without that feedback, without that coaching, they really are not going to move ahead. It's going to actually affect their competitiveness and their performance as not just individuals, but at the team level and also the organizational impact. That's one example of a company that I'm working with. And what's so cool, and for your listeners out there who work individually with clients, you know, the best kind of business is repeat business.
Yeah.
And so when I come in and do, let's say, a keynote and we stimulate some dialogue in that session, then I come in and do consulting. And I think that's been a lesson learned over the years in business, that instead of trying to go search and you know, keep cold call and get all kinds of clients out there, I know we're getting into some of your arena here, but how do you get new sales? Well, it's doing a fabulous job at the outset and getting to really understand the culture and the needs of the organization you're working with, and then continuing to do a deeper dive with them. So you become a very valued partner.
You mentioned the keynote. What's the keynote? What's your typical keynote, you know, discussion on?
Well, that's another strategy that I took on when I went into this direction 2 years ago of writing this book. I decided to pick a lane. And a lot of us have heard that term, create, as my European counterparts say, a niche We call it a niche, and that is my niche, and that is my keynote. My keynote is the introverted leader, building on your quiet strength. And in there, I talk about how introverts can be more effective, but I also talk about how the other half of the population, which is 50% of the extrovert and the talkers, or the outies, if you will, can better understand those quieter folks among them. And so it's been a very successful speech. I've given it hundreds of times now, and I'm actually, it's led to my writing a new book now. So it's I decided to really hone in and get really great at doing that speech.
It's fun getting really good at one particular area, you know, honing in on that particular scenario and what you learn and how you understand it to a whole nother degree.
I've had my best year ever, and I was a bit concerned about limiting opportunities. But I think those of us who've used this strategy of getting really, really good in a specialized area, it seems to magically open up other opportunities. Mm-hmm. And people are, bottom line, willing to pay you more because you are more of an expert and you're not just a dabbler.
So if I'm a business owner and I'm thinking, you know, this Jennifer sounds kind of neat, what would trigger me to say, yeah, I really need to have her come in and either talk to us or maybe work with us?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to have the need. Mm-hmm. You have to recognize that you're going to invest in your people. And I think most people would say they do. But I find particularly with small business owners, it's a challenge sometimes. That has to be a priority. So I need clients who are, you know, the ones that are attracted to me are the ones that are interested in the topic and willing to pay. But in terms of my specialization and what makes me different is I think I really am very proud of the experience that I bring to the table. Sure, I'm an excellent coach. I'm a really good speaker. I'm a pretty good writer. But I think what makes me really different is my wisdom. So there are some advantages, I realize, to getting older, John. and so I bring stories. I'm not the kind of coach that just asks questions. I'll tell people suggestions based on my experience in working internally in organizations and with hundreds of different types of companies, functions, and people. So I think that's a major specialization.
Now, I'm fascinated with this whole book writing thing. I've got a friend of mine that coaches people on how to write their first book and get, you know, published and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. How did you get into deciding I'm going to write a book?
Wow. My main reason for writing the book was to increase the message, to get the message out to more people, or the messages that I felt I had to share. And I really do believe everybody, John, has a book within them. Now, with that said, you're kind of not sure about that?
No, I'm totally sure.
You're totally sure.
I totally
okay.
agree
I was
with
misreading
that.
Your body language.
I totally agree with that.
I saw a shrug for those of you who don't have video.
It was kind of like, you're right.
You're right.
Well,
oh,
no,
okay. Glad I checked it out. Glad I checked it out. But I do believe that. Now, the question becomes, you know, how do you make that happen?
Right.
And so what I consciously took steps. I never really thought that I was that great a writer. In fact, I come from a family of writers, actually. And so that was part of the reason I thought, well, I can't write like them. But you know what? I started writing. And I took a couple of classes at Emory to get my kind of brush off the muscle. And so long story short, I started submitting articles and getting more comfortable with the whole idea and the craft of writing. Because it mm-hmm. is a craft.
Yeah.
And bottom line, it's two words. Hard work.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard work and discipline. I'll add a third. It's discipline. And so that's how I started writing articles, and I started writing columns for national magazines. Got some visibility there. And then, of course, with blogs and with the web opportunities now, it's just amazing. You can get so many linked into so many blogs. You really can create your personal brand that way. So that had the dual impact of not just getting me out there as a writer and getting myself, my confidence up, but it also helped to set the stage for my marketing of my new direction in my business. And then I co-wrote a book with my husband on HR, which I know Frank's going to talk about that today. I don't recommend that. Writing. We've been married over 30 years.
And that almost ended it? You don't recommend Frank talking about it?
No. No, Bill will tell you too. Our styles are diametrically opposed. In fact, he's the introvert in the family. So he's the one I really wrote my second book for to figure him out after all this time. You know?
That's excellent.
And sometimes he'll hold the book up and say, read the book.
Yeah.
But anyway, we co-authored and it was a great experience. It got published. And then I was very fortunate to land upon my last publisher, whose CEO is an introvert, Barrett Kohler, And they're a fantastic publisher out in California. And it's been, it was came out in 2009, and it's been an unbelievable experience and opened up many doors. It's been translated into 8 languages. I've gotten international opportunities. And so if you, you know, writing a book, as my publisher said to me the other day, not many people read the book. But they will talk about the book, and having a message comes through in your book. So I really have a lot to share, and I really encourage people out there, if they're considering to write a book, as you say, there are resources now. If you don't consider yourself a writer or a promoter, to help you, you have people you know who are book coaches, correct?
Right. Yeah. So obviously in your line of work, there's a lot of competition. What do you see that sets you aside or apart from competition?
Yeah, I don't really look at it that way anymore. I used to look at it as I'm against them or they're against me. But I think I've had such positive experiences with professionals who are my, you might say, competitors.
Yep.
That I really decided to reframe it 2 years ago, particularly when I ramped up my speaking career, because I found the people in that profession were so helpful. You would think they're in your space,
right?
You know, and they're not going to share with you things. And I realized the pie is big enough for all of us.
Yeah.
So I look at it more as partnering. And collaborations and really important strategic alliances with folks. And so I that question is always a challenge to me. Perhaps because I'm not a salesperson at heart, you know, that maybe I don't look at it that way. But I think even my successful sales colleague friends also look at collaboration and consultation as a really important part of their success.
Yeah. So are you the extrovert or are you the introvert?
I'm going to have you guess. What do you think, John?
I think the extrovert is
You're
probably,
absolutely yeah, right.
The extrovert,
so the way I just finished your sentence, that's an extrovert. And just to, for the distinction, the extrovert gets their energy from without, from talking. So you'll have to put the timer on soon so we can let our other guests have a chance to do that. But seriously, we get our energy from without, and introverts are from within. But I'm so grateful for the introverts in my life, and I think all at an organizational level. We're learning about the gifts that those folks bring, the responding before reacting, the innovation that comes from solitude, all of the calm temperament that they bring to the table. And it's something that us extroverts can learn from and can really help our organizations, the two sides of the coin.
Yeah. Well, great stuff. So that was a great segue into our last question, which is what would your pearl of wisdom be that you'd share with our listeners from experiences that you've had?
I'll share with you what a reporter who was interviewing me said when she captured it. She said, push yourself, but be yourself.
Hmm.
Push yourself, but be yourself. And I think that sums up to me what this journey about learning and development is about.
Yeah. Well, that's great stuff. So
thank you.
Jennifer, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way would be to go to my website or to contact me directly. It's About You, Inc., AboutYouInc.com.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a blog that people can feel free to check out. Lots of, and that's the introvertedleaderblog.com. And on my website at aboutyouinc.com, I have lots of complimentary resources, articles, and other things that people can download. So Okay. Be great to take a visit, and I'd love to hear from you. And also LinkedIn, of course.
All right.
Right.
Well, make sure you link in with her. So
absolutely.
So,
thank you.
Hopefully we will be back, and if we got time at the end,
so.
To do kind of a general
Appreciate
discussion.
It.
Thanks for your time. So our next guest is Karen Ewald, and Karen is the Managing Director of Executive Mining, Inc. Karen, how are you?
Good. I'm very good.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you came to us.
Well, I've been in some form of staffing or executive search for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
What I basically do is I work with either corporations or executive search firms and help them identify new team members for their organizations.
So you're working with the actual companies and saying, you know, what kind of positions might you need? And then are you helping them fill those positions?
Yes, I'm helping to identify top quality leaders for their organizations.
And Executive Mining is your company?
Yes, it is. It's my
company.
Now,
where did you get that idea from, the Executive Mining title?
Well, I see top executives as hidden gems,
mm-hmm.
as Jennifer said, those hidden gems. And when I was thinking of a name of a company, I thought, well, you know, these people are hard to find. They are not people that are out there that everybody can see. So I thought, ooh, it's like mining for gold. It's not an easy process. It's a difficult process. It is takes time. It takes patience. You have to go and really look and dig for those individuals. So that's how I came up with the name.
Oh, very creative. Very good. Now, are you in the introverted side or are you in the extroverted side?
I am more, I think, believe it or not, I am more on the introverted side.
Yeah.
But I do have an extroverted side.
Yeah.
So
a little streak in you that gets out there.
Yeah, every once in a while.
The energy from the external.
Every once in a while.
Frank's over here going, come on, Karen, we know you. That's great. So how long have you been here in Atlanta?
I have been in Atlanta for about 16 years.
16 years. No, I've got a distinctive little accent going on there. I'm not.
You have a combination of a New Jersey accent.
Jersey. Yeah.
And a Puerto Rican accent.
Puerto Rican. Oh. That's the one that I was getting is the Puerto Rican side.
That's,
I just couldn't quite.
That's
the
it.
Jersey messed me up big time.
It always does. When I talk to Frank for too long, then it really comes out.
Yeah. Well, Frank, no, don't talk yet, Frank.
You're from New Rico. Is it? New Rico. All right.
So how long have you been in the States?
I actually grew up in Puerto Rico. I was there for about 12 years, and then I came to the States and have been here ever since.
Ever since?
Ever since.
Don't want to leave?
No.
You go back and visit?
I haven't been back in about 20 years.
Okay.
So it's been a long time, but I try to keep up my language skills.
Yeah.
So I talk to people in Spanish all the time.
All the time. My dad grew up in Cuba.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, grew up in Cuba, and he left when Castro came in and didn't actually leave he was actually there when they kicked Batista out and was part of the whole, you know, yay, everything's good. And then he went to college and it was like, no, things aren't
not
so
going
good.
Back.
And his dad was like, don't come back. But it's like, it's interesting. Spanish, he speaks Spanish and people look at him like, did that just come out of you?
I get that all the time. Yeah. I'll start speaking Spanish and somebody will look at me like, huh? Did you really just do that? And then they're amazed because once I get going, my fluency becomes very, I become very fluent. So they
talk with your hands. Do all this?
All the time. Yeah. I have to sit on my hands.
So tell us about your clients. Who are your clients?
Basically, we go pretty much across industries and across functions. So I do searches in medical devices, manufacturing, building products, pharmaceuticals, pretty much across industries. So we're pretty much considered a generalist.
Okay. And how do you, when you go out, so you're kind of on the both ends of the spectrum. You're going in and you're saying, look, I need to work with a corporation to see, A, do they need somebody? And if they do, who do they need, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then you go out to the marketplace and find those people.
And that's the challenge.
That even now, that's the challenge.
Oh, definitely.
Really?
There are a lot of people out in that are currently in transition. But a lot of our clients are very determined to make sure that they're passive candidates. In other words, people who are currently employed. So that's really tough to do. Some of those people are hard to find.
People that are actually employed now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of hard.
And they don't want to make a move. They're a little apprehensive about the economy, so they don't want to make those moves.
They don't want to make a jump and then have that slip out from under them and then end up being on the street somewhere.
Correct.
Yeah. If I may say so, she is a bit of an introvert. And I must tell you, she is without a lot of doubt the best researcher I have ever worked with in my more than 25 years in this business. I always kid people by saying that Karen's the only person I've ever known who found Jimmy Hoffa's email address. She is absolutely outstanding.
So obviously those skills you put to use well in finding the people? Is that
right?
That's
exactly what I do. I will flip every stone to find the perfect candidate for our client. These people are not, some of them don't have a lot of high visibility, so they are at their desk, they're doing their job, they're pretty much heads down doing what they need to get done. Yeah. So they're not really looking to make a transition, to make a change to a new opportunity.
Right.
They are very focused on what they're currently doing. And so I have to actually present, first of all, I got to get them to talk to me, to listen, not to hang up on me.
Yeah.
And then I have to really sell them on that position. So I have to know as much as I possibly can about my client, and then learn as much as I possibly can about that individual while I'm having a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. And what do you find more difficult, working with the company that's trying to place it, or working with the person that's the candidate?
It's sort of middle of the road.
Yeah.
There are clients that are difficult, of course, because they want everything under the sun in a candidate. And then there are candidates who just don't want to give you any information. They're very, very, they're holding on to their information. They don't want to tell you too much. They kind of want to leave it and keep it to themselves.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most rewarding part of your business and what you do?
I would say I love the challenge that I have. Going out and actually trying to find that individual that is not looking, or even, you know, just finding that perfect candidate for that client is probably the best thing. It's that hunt. It's finding that perfect person. Even when they're not available, I've actually found people while they're on vacation in Cape Cod, and they're originally from California.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just really going out after that person and really finding them and having them brought into the organization and the organization be thrilled with that individual. That's what I like to do. Yeah.
So you're kind of a tenacious introvert.
Yes.
Yeah.
To say the least, yes.
Nice. I like it. That's great. Now, how do you know when you found the right fit?
They have to have what our client is looking for. They have to match their culture. They have to be interested in growing their career. And have that energy, that drive to move forward, to want to be, to take that next step in their career.
So they need to want to make the change, and they need to be the right fit.
Right.
Do you normally get the right fit out of the gates? I mean, if you're going in and presenting somebody to the company, are they typically going, yeah, you're right, this is the right guy or girl?
There are times that does happen, depending on the project that I'm working on. If it's something that I have worked on a lot just over the short period of time, over the last couple months or whatever, then there is a better chance because I've talked to so many individuals on other projects that I may know the key players.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on the project I'm currently working on. But right out of the gate, I wouldn't say that I will find the perfect guy. I have to talk to a lot of people. You know, it's like that kissing a lot of frogs before you find your prince.
All right. There you go. So you got to kiss a lot of frogs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you are standing in front of, which you might be doing right now, a bunch of people who are in transition, who are in that transitionary mm-hmm. side of things, what advice might you give them in terms of, being that person that's landed or, being in a position where you would want to talk to them?
I would tell them to make sure they continue to be visible. If they, for example, if they're on LinkedIn, make sure that there's a way for the recruiters, the researchers to find you. Even if it's just a Gmail account or a Yahoo account, an email address, make it as easy as possible for that recruiter or that researcher to find you. This, unfortunately, a lot of recruiters and researchers have, a bad reputation, or too busy to take the time to really dig for that person's contact information. You want to make it as easy as possible for somebody to reach you. So that means if you have an email account, perfect. They can send you a quick little email. If they have to go through 50 individuals and there's only 25 that have emailed, they're going to go through those 25 first before they go back to those others.
Is there anything else? Because LinkedIn is obviously a very popular mm-hmm. site. Do you use LinkedIn much in your research?
I use LinkedIn. I use a lot of social media.
Okay.
Part of my responsibilities, my role, is to not only use traditional search methods, which is picking up the phone and calling, but I also use social media. I use LinkedIn. There is associations, seminars that people go to, company bios. There's a number of different things that people can actually do to get that visibility out there so that the recruiters and the hiring managers can actually find you.
And on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. what are top three things that they need to do, that somebody should have it in a good LinkedIn page or site so that they're visible?
I would say to make sure that they have some kind of contact information.
So like an email address?
An email address. If they want to put a phone number on, that's fine too. But at least an email address.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Just make sure that they have a pretty complete bio so that people can quickly review their information.
Mm-hmm.
And that when they have companies on there, and if they've been at the same company more for a number of years and gone through a number of different positions within that same company, that they use that as a header and then list the list of companies underneath it. So it doesn't look like they're job hopping.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of times when you identify it as company A and then one title and then the same company A under a different title, it looks like you're job hopping instead of just showing all the different progression.
Yeah. Okay. And what is it about what you do that gets you up in the morning?
I love that hunt.
Going back to the hunt.
Going back to the hunt.
Tenacious. Oh my gosh, I need to hire you.
That is my favorite part. That is I will search and search and search and search till I find that right person. Yeah. And like Frank said, you know, I will flip every stone.
Have you always been that way?
Yes. Have I you? Love research.
You, research. So you were a research geek growing up,
yes.
And you're a research geek now.
Yes, I am.
Totally gets you going.
Oh, it
that's
does.
Great. That's great stuff. So if I was an employer, mm-hmm. and I was considering adding another position, mm-hmm. why would I bring in somebody like you versus doing it myself?
The search process takes a lot of time. A lot of people don't realize it is very time consuming. If you post something on the internet, you could get from one posting 50, 100, 200 resumes, and I would say probably only 2% of them are qualified. It takes a lot of time to weed through these resumes, find the right individual. Most of these companies don't have the manpower to dedicate to doing just that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, recruiters, in all honesty, this is not their favorite part. This is not, they don't want to do all the research. They want to be doing the candidate development. They want to do the talking to the client. I love the research part.
Yeah.
So that's where my strengths are. So that's where I stay focused.
So you save time and you allow them to not do what they hate to do.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. Good marriage.
I know.
Nice stuff. All right. So well, I'm going to actually go to the last question, which is pearl of wisdom. So to our listeners, what would you say is your pearl of wisdom from your experience in doing what you do?
When the recruiters and the researchers call, answer the phone.
Now, I think that's...
Talk to us.
That's okay. So, all right. That's a self-serving pearl of wisdom.
A lot of people will not take the time to talk to us. They'll say, I'm not interested. I'm busy. Whatever. Talk to us. Because you just never know what might come from it. The thing is that you may not be interested in that position that they're extending to you at that time, the information they're giving to you, but if you help that recruiter out, that recruiter is going to remember you for life, and they will come back to you every time they have something that may be good for you.
Because then they get to know you.
Exactly.
Right? Do you have any, I got to go a little further on that question, because do you have an example of when you've had someone that kind of gave you the Heisman to start with, and they were like, no, I don't want to. And you're just like, no, man, you are the one I need to talk to. You got any examples of that?
Oh, of course I do.
Give me an example.
I had a gentleman who called me, and I was working on a VP of manufacturing. And he kept saying, oh, you know, I'm not interested. I must have made probably at least 10 calls to him, and he would say, oh, I don't know, I'm not, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. He kind of stalled me. I'm not really interested. I don't really know anybody. Let me think about it, that kind of thing. About 6 months later, his company decided to downsize, and he called me up, and I knew exactly when I picked up that phone, I recognized that voice.
I said, how are you?
And he said, do you remember me? I said, of course. And I said, you, and so I kind of, went back through some of the information that I remembered about him. Yeah. And he said, you really do remember me. And I said, yeah. I said, how can I help you? And he said, well, I don't know if you heard, but my company's downsizing. And I'm part of this downsizing. What do you have?
Did you say, well, thank you very much. I'm sorry to hear that. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And you hang up on him?
No, of course not.
Oh, come
not.
On. You should
of
have hung up not. Right and pay him back.
I said, send me a copy of your resume. Let's see what we can do with it. And let me just check around.
Yeah.
So, and I still talk to him all the time. And I have, you know, a number of examples like that.
When you land somebody, mm-hmm. when that person lands and the company hires the person, mm-hmm. What happens after that?
I continue to talk to those individuals.
You do.
Because in the future, they may be a source for me.
Mm-hmm.
They may be a potential candidate for something else, or they may be just somebody that if I have, when I mean a source, they could either help me with information, like maybe some terminology I'm not very familiar with, mm-hmm. or it could be something as simple as, hey, listen, I remember that you were at so-and-so company. You know, who was the VP there that may be interested in this role that I have?
Right, right.
So, and I'm very, very... adamant about keeping people's names confidential. So when I do go in and talk to somebody that somebody's given me as a referral, I don't ever tell the name. I will keep that I will take that to my grave.
All right.
Just because...
Protect, you got to protect the source,
because I want to,
right?
protect that source. And also, I don't want people to think that there's people saying, oh, he may be looking for a job.
Yeah.
It's more of a, hey, who do you know? How can you help me? That kind of thing.
Good.
But then I'm always willing to help. So that's the flip side. So.
Perfect. So, Karen, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Well, the best way actually is giving me a call. I'm always on the phone, but I'm always there at my phone. So my direct dial, I'll give you that number, 770-926-6485. I also have a website, which is execmining.com, which is executive mining, but it's short, exec mining. And those are the two best ways to reach me. I'm always available, always. And you can reach me pretty much either way. I'm always answering emails.
We'll get that from Frank. Yeah, there's a story behind that laugh. I'm going to get it just in a second.
Absolutely.
And I guess the third way would be via email, which is my email address is jce@execmining.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
You hang out. Hopefully, we'll have a couple of general questions for the crew. The introvert, you might have to... You know, bow over Jennifer a little bit because she's.
I don't know.
Do
I might, but she's good.
Give me
she's
that mic.
Doing great. This shows how introverts aren't just one dimensional.
See, there you go.
When you get
and now we're going to have the other end of the coin, which
there
will
you
be
go.
Frank.
Right.
So, Frank, how are
now,
you, sir?
You've given me two very tough acts to follow.
I know.
Can we do this with hand signals?
No sign language. So, Frank Palma, not Palmer.
Palma.
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 Being
is,
from Cuba, you should recognize that.
I
right
know,
away.
I got you.
Yes.
Is the president of Frank Palma and Associates,
mm-hmm.
and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So maybe you could give us a little bit of background on you and your business.
Well, my background is somewhat varied. I started out actually in corporate America and worked for firms like RCA and American Broadcasting Companies, and then went into the consulting business, the executive search and human resources consulting business. And did that for a while. And then about 11 years ago, I decided to start my own business. So I've worked in the manufacturing and service sector of the corporate sector. I've worked in the consulting business. And now I'm an entrepreneur and I have my own firm. So I've done pretty much a lot of different things, all of which, however, has been focused around human resources management and talent management.
So do you do a lot of the hiring piece of things, or are you doing more of the analysis of what kind of positions HR needs to fill?
Both. It's getting to know your client, what their strategic initiatives are, what their talent acquisition needs are.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, they're not fully aware of exactly what they would like to search for, in which case we help them think through that process as well.
Now, I noticed that you've got three locations, Joise.
Joise.
Right. North Carolina and here in Georgia.
Right.
How has that been to expand like that?
Well, the expansion is not really a very, very large expansion because the office I have in North Carolina is run by my VP of operations, who's been with me for 17 years.
Wow.
I pretty much run the office in New Jersey and divide my time between being in New Jersey and being here in Atlanta. But my plans for the immediate future are to relocate my headquarters office here in the Atlanta, Metro Atlanta area.
So you work mainly from here?
Half the time, at least half the time I'm here.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about your process. How does your process work?
Well, the methodology that we use, I think, sets us apart from a good many other industries, and it's been developed in conjunction with my clients over the years. To begin with, you have to validate a spec. There's a difference between a job description and a job spec. A job description will tell you the scope of the responsibility, what someone is expected to do in the way of their duties. A job spec focuses on what the person ought to have done or accomplished within their business career to that point. So a good many people who want to go out and initiate a search don't recognize the difference between a job description and a job spec. So that has to be worked through. And then you have to validate the spec. Companies who want to go out and search for a key impact player will develop a job spec, which is a combination of, I'd like someone who can sing like Sinatra, dance like Fred Astaire, and look like Ginger Rogers. The only problem with that is that person in the real world doesn't exist. So you have to hone it down. That's a kind of a theoretical construct that they have developed within their own mind. But you have to relate it to the real world because a successful search is one that succeeds.
Right. And When you get down to brass tacks, obviously you're working with the companies, and you're working with the people that are being interviewed. Right. Who do you see as your client?
Both.
Both.
Most of my clients today, most of them, are people I met initially as candidates, and I'll tell you why. I see the executive search process as being somewhat unique and different. The essence of executive search is career counseling. It's not filling jobs. It's career counseling. The tagline for my company is merging business and career strategies. When you have an individual whose career aspirations match up to the strategic initiatives and needs of a client, you have a marriage that should last for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there are a lot of people in the recruiting business who don't understand that executive search is career counseling. It's not filling jobs.
Have you found in this last downturn that there's been people that you've worked with that you've been surprised that are now on the market again?
Well, sure. A good many people in career transition, and Karen and I co-founded a career transition group called Alpha Omega, which meets one night a month at the St. Ives Country Club for C and VP level executives in career transition here in Atlanta. And in a good many cases, people who are in career transition are there for political reasons or because of acquisitions or because of divestitures. There are a good many number of reasons why. It's not as much of a stigma today as it was 15 years ago
right.
to be unemployed.
Yeah. a lot of the market's that way right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, even in the executive side of things, which we work with all the time,
sure.
Certainly seems to be a lot more popular place to be than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to a candidate that was looking for work? They need to do the activities they need to be doing to land in today's kind of environment.
Well, to begin with, 80% of people in career transition who land through networking. So you've got to work with people to understand the various techniques they can employ to effectively network. We go a little deeper than that. Each one of us has in our own mind, pardon me, a life plan. And if you don't really have some sort of concept of your life plan, you need a different kind of counseling. But you have a life plan, and you should try and develop a career strategy and a career plan that's in sync with your life plan. If someone offered you a position in Des Moines, Iowa, and you were married and you had three kids in high school, would you go to Des Moines, Iowa for that opportunity? So it's effectively, proactively managing your business career in sync with your life plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if the corporate side of things,
mm-hmm.
when you've got individuals right now, organizations that maybe they're looking, and what I've heard a lot of is, yeah, they're looking, but they're not hiring. And it mm-hmm. seemed like things were picking up for a while there, and they kind of dropped off a little bit. What have you seen on the corporate side in today's environment in terms of pulling the trigger? Are they pulling the trigger on these executive positions?
Well, I don't mean to get into a political discussion here. That's not my focus. But
yeah.
Because of the uncertainty of practices and policies coming out of Washington and how it's affected the private sector, there is a great deal of uncertainty among my clients to move their strategic initiatives forward. They don't know what they can expect. And, you know, one of the last things that people in business or people running a business want to know is what's going to happen in the future. I come from a corporate environment where I had to know what my numbers were going to be by the end of the month, by the 15th of the month. It's not like the Academy Awards where you open up an envelope and find out whether you won or lost at the end of the month.
Right.
So with the kind of uncertainty that exists today and the kind of uncertainty coming out of Washington, it's caused a good many of our clients to think about looking, but they're afraid to make the commitment.
How do you, on the other side of the coin, how do you work with your candidates to keep them engaged in that position that you think is a good fit for them?
Well, if it's a process of career counseling, you continually have to discuss with them the things that they ought to be doing. Now, as an example, I've never taken a search in my entire 25 years where the client didn't say to me, how long will it take before we begin to see candidates? And the fact of the matter is, from the point in time that I take the assignment to when I present the first candidate, is half the time that it takes the client to make a hiring decision. Because of travel schedules, people are traveling globally. They've got to meet 8 or 9 people before an offer is extended. So you've got to stay in constant touch with the candidates who are active candidates for a particular assignment that you're engaged in.
Right, right. If a candidate is out there and doing job search with the social media and the networking and those kinds of things, what advice would you give them to stay engaged and how to use social media, as Karen talked about with LinkedIn?
Well, I think social media is helpful. Obviously, networking is the key to success in terms of finding a new opportunity. LinkedIn is extremely effective. I think that there are two things that you have to do, I think, that are important. And we stress these things both in terms of your networking techniques as well as the first page of your resume. It's absolutely essential that you do two things on the first page of your resume, because you're only going to get about 15 seconds from a researcher who's going to screen it.
Is that right, Karen? About 15 seconds?
Maybe 10.
The first thing is you've got to brand yourself. This is who I am, and this is what I do. The second thing you must do is to make a strong value proposition statement. This is the value that I can add. This is what I can bring to the table. If you can't do that as a part of your networking techniques, if you can't do that on the first page of your resume, the chances of success are greatly limited.
Okay, so that's going to bring me to a little bit of a different question, but I got one hanger on this one. Mm-hmm. Old school used to be resume never more than one page, like ever. Mm-hmm. I've seen 5, 6, like 8-page resumes. What's the deal now? I mean, is it acceptable to go a bit longer?
John, if you talk to 10 people about resumes, you'd get 12 different opinions. But yeah. I'll say this to you, okay? A 1-page resume is good for someone who's very well known. Barack Obama can have a 1-page resume, okay? 3-page resumes are boring. No one gets to page 3, okay? It's like the first chapter of the book. If it doesn't catch your attention, they're going to not read chapter 16.
Right.
2 pages are fine. And that's what it should be. You should have a 2-page resume.
All right. Perfect. So, of course, now I've forgotten the lead-in that I was going to... Oh, I know what it is.
I've forgotten the answer?
No, I got it. It happens all the time. Alpha Omega. Yes. Karen and you started Alpha Omega. Yes. And I know that this is an organization that that Nadia, my marketing communications manager, knows a good bit about. Tell us a little bit about Alpha Omega and what you guys do.
Well, what we've done is we've made it a workshop, focusing on networking techniques. And I went to a few meetings when I first came to Atlanta of career transition groups, and it was a process where you went and you got a cocktail and you exchanged business cards. A public speaker came in and talked to you for a half hour. Then there was a question and answer session. There was nothing tangible that was meaningful to take away from that meeting that you could effectively use with your career transition process. So we started this group as a workshop. And within 26 months, we've grown to 210 members. We placed 40% of our members during that period of time as far east as the UK, as far west as California. So it continues to grow, and people come and they participate. We have a couple of requirements to join the group. Networking is giving as much as it is taking. Mm-hmm. So when we screen people to become members of our group, they have to make the commitment that they will come to the meetings and participate and help other members of the group with introductions, lead-ins, constructive criticisms, and ideas. It's not just a 3-hour session where someone comes in and talks at you. It's a workshop, and it's paid great dividends for us. We're very, very pleased with the results we've gotten.
What are some of the techniques or the types of topics that you're training in these sessions?
Well, as an example, resumes are always a key question. Now, if you think of the career transition process as a 100-yard dash with the hurdles, okay, the first hurdle is the resume, and it's the hurdle with the worst odds. The odds are 50-1 against you. You submit your resume, there are going to be 49 others. If you get over that first hurdle and you're asked to come in for an interview, the odds drop to 5-1. If you get asked back for a second interview, the odds drop to possibly 2-1. So it's that first hurdle of the resume that we try and focus on in the beginning. We try to explain there are two different kinds of resumes. There are three different formats to each of those resumes, and they have to be aware of that to get past the gatekeeper. And there are some people, as an example, there are some people very introverted, and you've got to work a little more with those people than others to get them to come out of their shells, so to speak. And so we focus on that as a technique. We focus on interviewing as a technique. Statistics have shown the less you talk in an interview, the better chance you have of getting the job. Let the person doing the interviewing talk most of the time. They can't find anything wrong with something you haven't said, okay? It's the same process with a resume. The biggest fault we have is, and I include myself in this, is that we put too much information down. See, the initial phase of recruiting is a negative thought process. Now, have you done any recruiting in your time as an example?
None.
Well, if you
were... Oh, no, that's not true. I have, yes, absolutely. Okay. I hired several people.
All right. So let's say you had 50 resumes.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you want to do first? You'd want to go through those, and you'd want to...
Just stack them, right?
You want to get down to a short...
Gone, right?
So it's a negative thought process. And so the more specific that you are on your generic resume, the greater the chances you're going to get knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Instead of saying... well-rounded human resources executive for consumer products, telecommunications, you can just say, well-rounded human resources executive, period. So we try and teach those techniques, and we try and explain to them what the process is in the employment market of how people get hired, and we try and develop their techniques to address those.
All right. All right, well, perfect. So... Again, the pearl of wisdom with the experience that you have in working with executives and businesses, what would you pass on as your pearl of wisdom to our listeners?
I'm going to quote Humphrey Bogart.
Okay.
He said, "The only thing I owe my audience is the best damn performance I can give." And that's what you owe your employer. But you owe yourself and your family at least the same.
Mm-hmm.
The pearl of wisdom is... you are the chief executive officer of your own business career, and you must proactively manage it. Networking isn't something you do when you're only in career transition. Networking is something you do every day of your life, whether you're gainfully employed or in career transition. And that's my pearl of wisdom.
All right. Well, perfect. So, Frank, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, how would they reach out to you?
Call Karen.
No.
No, it's that's Frank Palma, P-A-L-M-A, at FP Associates, which is abbreviated ASSOCS.com. And, you mentioned the introverted leader, which is very interesting because we're doing a lot of work. We do executive coaching as well.
Yes.
And I have just a quick story which proves the point. The charismatic leader can be a very tough person, mm-hmm. and they normally have very, very short time spans of success. But there was a shortstop who played for the Cincinnati Reds by the name of Concepcion, and the manager at the time was Sparky Anderson.
Yes.
He was a very charismatic guy.
Yes.
And one day Concepcion made three errors in one game. So after the game was over, Sparky Anderson went over. He said, don't worry about today. He said, did I ever tell you the story about when I was playing in Elmira? And he said, you told me that story. He said, did I ever tell you what happened to me when I was playing in Buffalo? Sparky. he says, as a matter of fact, Sparky, I think I've heard all of your stories. And Sparky Anderson said, if that's true, either you got to go or I got to go. So that's charismatic
great.
Leader,
that
you know.
That is wonderful. Yeah.
When they're out of ammunition, they got to change venues, right?
Yeah.
So here's a general question for you guys. Frank talked about it a little bit, but what would you say is the key to succeeding in your professional life? Personal life's a different ballgame, but in your professional life, what would you say is the most important thing for somebody to do to be successful?
Integrity. Stand up for what you believe in, regardless of what the consequences are. Don't be a bobblehead corporate executive. Stand up for what you believe in if you think it's right, and perform in that manner. I think integrity is absolutely essential.
I would add to that, know thyself. I think when we know what makes us sing, we can find careers that are just a fit for us. When we know what we're about, we can lead effectively. So know thyself, and it's a continuous process.
Unto thyself be true.
That one too, right? Yeah. Unto thyself be true. It connects with that, absolutely.
Integrity. Absolutely.
I would say don't be scared to take that next step. If there's something out there you want, go for it.
You guys have all done coaching, obviously, with clients and with companies. What has been the biggest challenge in that process of working with somebody and trying to help them kind of get over that next hurdle or take that next step?
Well, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think that we are locked in emotionally to who we are at about the age of 6 or 7. So you can change people intellectually, but it's very difficult to change people emotionally. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've done executive coaching, and you can hold up that mirror, and you can try and explain to the individual how they are being perceived by other people, because in a good many cases, you don't know how you're being perceived by some of your colleagues. And you can try and work with them from an intellectual point of view, but to get inside their innermost workings and change their emotional makeup is extremely difficult. And you can do it in 6 months. Maybe you can do it in 6 years. So it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, I would agree. I heard a friend of mine talk about his transformation when he was being coached. And he talked about just having this aha experience. It was the whole shift for him in his negative thinking and how he looked at his employees. And once he got where all this was coming from, he had that epiphany. It changed his way of acting. I think it's very much around the thought process that my clients have. And if we can also shift that in addition to the emotions, beating themselves up is a huge problem.
Yeah.
I'm never good enough. You know, I'll never get this. And they set goals for themselves to develop in executive coaching. And one of my goals, as I see it, is to reinforce their progress and to look at things not as the glass is half empty, but what have you succeeded at and build on those successes. And with that, I see a correlation in terms of their confidence, John. And I think that's my approach to executive coaching. It's not just to look at the negative, but to look at it realistically, but also build on the strengths.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you guys have experienced that has helped to speed up that process in terms of results? Techniques or anything that they could do?
One of the techniques I use is if I'm coaching someone who's... Obviously, I'm coaching the person because they're not getting along well with a good many of their colleagues and not being perceived well within the organization. And I will recommend that they take their biggest adversary. I use that term in quotations.
Sure.
Go to that person and say, hey, John, look, I'm working on a special project. I need your expertise and your help. Would you work with me on the project? And it disarms, to a degree, that individual. And I've done it in several instances, and it turned out that the people began to get to know each other, to like each other, and they worked very effectively with one another. So I think that's one of the approaches that you can use. I've used it, and I've used it successfully on many occasions.
Isn't it interesting? It seems as though many times people that have that adversarial relationship are so many times just like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would add to that what I found with particularly working with the introverts in my practice is that preparation is the key, not just for them, for all of us. So one of the techniques that I think is really useful, and it seems so obvious when you think about it, is to practice those conversations that are upcoming, those presentations. And so I do a lot of that role play, John, with my clients, and it's amazing just scripting it out, getting comfortable, repeating the phrasing you're going to use, and going in and trying it and doing it. Let's do it. We're not going to do it perfectly.
That's great. I have, being born and raised in the Brooklyn, New York City area, I was a great Brooklyn Dodgers fan. And Chuck Connors, who was the rifleman, as you know, also played for the Brooklyn Dodgers for a short period of time. He gave me a plaque that was given to him by the general manager of the Dodgers, Branch Rickey. And I have it in the back of my chair in my office. And what it says is, luck is the residue of design.
Yeah.
And I think that relates to preparation.
Mm-hmm.
If you prepare and you feel that you're well prepared, you're going to do a much
better
job.
You absolutely are.
Yeah.
All right. So. Well, good stuff. I appreciate all your time. You guys did a great job. Great insight, as we would expect from this kind of a crew. And
do we get lunch now?
No, no lunch. But I got a coffee mug for you.
Yeah, oh great!
I got a coffee
you
mug.
You made it easy,
I got a
John.
Toaster.
You made it
I
easy.
I have to give IOU on the coffee mug.
Oh, right. I got one with mints in it, so I got one in some water. It had pens. I got pens. All right. Well, thanks a lot again, you guys. We had
thank
a great
you.
Time.
Thank
you.
You very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Catch back up. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.